And we're holding on in Gimel Amud Beis, six lines from the bottom. We've been talking about the cases in Jerusa where an animal has been attacked by a predator, and there's the concern that the predator injected eris, venom, or we talked about what exactly is the nature of this venom into the victim, and therefore now the point is, in other words, what we're saying as we go through the sugya is it's not even, obviously if it makes a hole in one of the organs that makes it shreifa, then it's shreifa anyhow, that has nothing to do with Jerusa per se, that's just by virtue of the hole. But here we're talking about even when there's not a hole in any of the particular internal organs or anything like that, but just to have a mark, you have a red mark from the attack, where there the idea is that this eris, that this venom is going to, as time goes on, it's going to burn more through the body for that organ, and cause holes and other problems, and therefore it will be traitor because of that, even though right now such a hole hasn't developed yet. So the Gemara says, Rav Nachman says, but first, if an animal gets injured by a thorn or splinter or whatever, any kind of foreign object that enters the body, then it's going to be a problem only if the hole goes into the internal organs. So if you had, in other words, so it was injured on the outside of its body, so fine. As long as it doesn't go through the body wall, then you're fine. But if it goes through the body wall, then we have to be concerned. Rashi points out that it might have punctured one of the internal organs, and you might not be able to notice a puncture in one of them. For example, the dakin, the small intestines, you might not be able to notice that there's a hole over there, because after all, you don't know. You don't know where to look necessarily. With that said, another point that Rishonim say is because it might have healed over, it might have scabbed over, and as we learned before, that doesn't count as a valid sealant for the hole. Rishonim do bring some Mahag and from the Rambam that in fact it is possible to check, but it would mean, in other words, that Adchinok of the Fall wouldn't mean it's automatically trafe, therefore it would just mean then you have to start carefully checking everything to make sure it doesn't have a hold. Here we have the kind of thing that I'm more often right, that we don't have that expertise in. Anyway, continues with Nachman. The Jerusa, on the other hand, when it comes to an animal that was Jerusa, then you don't even need that there's an actual hole. Just the fact that the flesh turns red opposite the internal organs, then already that's enough to make the animal safer. Because again, then the idea is that the redness indicates that there's eris over there, and eventually it's going to puncture its way through. That's one way of learning what Rav Nachman said. In other things, Rav Zvid Masin Hoffman, Rav Zvid had a different version of how Rav Nachman said it. So that way, the Jerusa, it's when the flesh turns red. But Rav Zvid's version of Rav Nachman's statement is that if the attack took place on the Simonim, on the windpipe or the esophagus, then it's not enough that just the neck on the outside of them is red. Then it would have to be it's shreifa only if the simonim themselves become red. Now, we learned before that the outside of them is red anyway. So we're trying to explain it. In other words, that the inside of it turns red. The Rosh squeeze actually and says that means that even from the outside. But the point is it wouldn't be that just on the outside of the neck, it has to be, according to this version, the actual simonim themselves. And the idea is, as we learned yesterday, simonim poshmehe, that the simonim are generally hard and stiff, so therefore the eris doesn't get to them so easily. So if you see that they themselves are red, it shows that the eris actually had an effect on them, but otherwise not. Okay? The Gemara continues, Bibi Barabaya asked a question in this connection. Now we know, we've learned earlier in the Perek, when it comes to the esophagus, as we learned earlier in our Perek, that even a small hole in it makes the animal trefa. So obviously, therefore, if there's a hole in it because of Drissa, then obviously also the animal is going to be trefa. On the other hand, the question is, therefore the Jerusa, then also obviously, even if there's a tiny hole, then it's going to make the animal trafe. Kone, what about though? Rabbi Yehuda asks, when it comes to the windpipe, as we learned earlier in this parak, Mikuvase Bekeinsel. If there's a hole in it, then it's Shefa, only we're going to have in the next mission at the bottom of our armor, that it's Shefa only if the missing part is the size of an Issa, which is a type of thing. So the question is, Jerusalem the Kama? The question is, what about Jerusa? Would it have the same thing? Or there would we say that Jerusa is more serious and therefore even a smaller hole will make it offset? So the Gemara says, "Vosev b'boya hoda poshta." After the Bibi Barabaya asked the question, they don't want to answer them. The answer is efagzeva mashahu. Either way, even a small hole is indeed going to make the animal today. So if the windpipe is damaged because of something else, we talked about yesterday, for example, we had an example of a bird that may have been injured among the reeds, like a reed got stuck in its throat, or something sharp penetrated or cut. Partially cut its throat or whatever. So then we can say that we have to look at Isser, what we talked about earlier in the parak. There can be a case of Roy, most of it. But in any case, here with Dunisa, indeed, even a small hole would make it today. So, my timer. Why is that? Zir mitl poly, but also because the poison is going to keep on burning and going. So, in other words, even though right now it only affected the Kona, but eventually it's going to affect the Vesh as well. Eventually it's going to affect the esophagus as well. And we know that an esophagus, even a small hole makes it terrible. That's how the Shikim Kubetis understands Rashi. The Rashba explains that the word is that it's not even a matter of the vesh, just the kone itself. Right now, you have only a small hole in it, but eventually this eris is going to cause a larger and larger hole, and eventually it will reach the size of an iser, or even larger, and therefore the animal is today for even now. Okay. The Gemara continues, Yosef Reb Yitzchak bar Shmuel bar Marta kamei de Reb Nachman. Reb Yitzchak bar Shmuel bar Marta was sitting as a Talmud in front of Reb Nachman. The Yosef Atomah, he was sitting and saying, Jerusa Sha'omu, this that the Talmud are talking about and telling us about this potential problem of Jerusa. So like we said before, Jerusa B'dikah, Kenegid B'nei Ayin. What you have to do is afterwards, you have to check. After you check the, you would have to check the animal opposite the whole area, the B'nei Ayin, of all of the insides of the animal, and check whether there's a mark from the Jerusa over there. Rab Nachman responds to him, or on the side it says, Omale Rab Nachman, that Rab Nachman rather says to him, he says, Harle Kim, he says, I swear in Hashem's name, Muri Bozam Kapavad Atma. We should know that Rav would say, in a case like this, where you have an animal that's a Jerusa, that you're going to have to check from the Kapha until the Atma. Now, Atma means the thigh. What does Kapha mean? The Gemara is going to discuss now what that means. Literally, Kapha means the skin. So Rav is saying that when you have a case of Jerusa, then you're going to have, it's not just going to be enough to check opposite of the name of Ayim, which means the body cavity of the animal. You're actually going to have to check more than that. Are we talking about a Suffolk Jerusa? No, because we don't see that Rav holds that a Suffolk Jerusa you don't have to be worried about. So Tosfos Udio explains that we're talking about over here a Vadai Jerusa. And we're saying even a Vadai Jerusa, then we're saying you still can do this checking and see whether in fact the attack of the predator caused it to become Jerusa. On the other hand, Tosfos had also brought a different opinion from the Rivon that says that no, when it's a Vadai, then checking doesn't help. We know that it was attacked by a predator, and it doesn't even matter whether we check and we find redness or not. Either way, it's going to be, ulcer. So here, in fact, we have to be talking about a suffering ulcer. But so the Osamayah explains that, let's say you're talking about that different animals have gotten mixed together. You have one animal that you know that a lion, let's say, attacked one of them. You don't know which one. So now we're saying then you can do B'dik. But not just negative name I am, not just the interior of the body, not just opposite the interior of the body, you're going to have to check more than that. Well, the noise is my kappa. What kappa does Rav mean by that? Elaim a kappa, and I really would kappa again means a spoon. So elaim a kappa de yada, does it mean the kappa yad, which would be, now in human beings, kappa yad means the palm of the hand. Animals don't have a palm. They walk basically on their tiptoe. So you're going to say, therefore, that it means from the spoon-shaped thing of the shoulder. In other words, the shoulder blade. You're going to say that it means that you have to check from the shoulder blade until the thigh. The problem with that is, Hainu Kenegad B'nei Me'ayim. That's exactly the same thing as Kenegad B'nei Me'ayim, because that's where at the shoulder blade is where basically the internal organs of the animal start there. So then Rav wouldn't be adding anything. So Ela Mikapa de Moicha. So rather what it means is you have to check from the Kapa de Moicha, which is to say from the skull, Atma all the way down to the thigh. So it's not just going to be enough to check from the shoulder blade and on. You're actually going to need to check from head to toe. So it comes out, in other words, when the Gemara is asking the question, it actually explains that the Gemara had assumed that the word B'nei Me'ayin is all the internal organs, so it would include even the lungs and the thing like that. But Tosfos asks on that, no, B'nei Me'ayin generally just means the digestive system. So they explain that when the Gemara had asked, Kapa the Yada would actually only mean not from the beginning of the shoulder blade, but only from the end of it. And by the time you get to the end of it, you're already at the point where you're just dealing with the digestive organs. But then we're saying that would be B'nei Me'ayin. So then we're saying that no, it means actually from head to toe. And also Tosfos points out, if it just meant the interior of the animal, then it would have used the expression kineged kol achol. And also Rav Uliu and Or Sylvia had said that you need to check also the simonim, so it all fits better if we say that kappa means kappa de mofa, not the shoulder blade, not one end or the other of the shoulder blade, but rather the brain pan and everything from there. With that said, the Beis Yosef understands that it means that maybe you don't need to check the brain itself, maybe you only need to check from the end of the brain, meaning from where the spinal fluid begins. But then the Rashba disagrees. You would have to check the brain as well. And the Beis Yosef explains that the Torah says the same thing. So you would, in fact, have to check from head to toe. And the Gemara continues in this connection. When Rechir by Yosef went up from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael, there was the same kind of thing. He found Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. The Yasser Tamin, they were sitting and saying, like, Rabbi Yitzchak Hashimu Bar Marta had said in front of Rabbi Nachman, Jerusa Sha'omrit Sushu B'nikah Dika Kenegib B'nei Me'ayim, and in this case of Jerusa, you need to check opposite of B'nei Me'ayim, which according to Rashi would mean all of the internal organs in the body cavity, and according to Tosfos would mean specifically the digestive organs. Amalahu, and Rabbi Yitzchak Yosef tells them the same thing. Oh, Kim, I swear in Hashem's name, Modi Barab, the Kappa Bat Atma, Rav had said you need to check from the Kappa until the Atma, which means from the brain until the thigh. Again, maybe the brain, maybe not, depending on different Rishonim. And as far as the thigh, the Beis Yosef points out, you only need to check as far as the Tzimis of Gidin, the bundle of tendons that we're going to learn about more in the next parak, which is by the lower joint of the animal's leg. Below that, even if it's cut off from the animal's kosher, so we don't need to check anything over there. So the Gemara continues. Omalei Reish Lakish. So Reish Lakish says to Rabbi Yochanan, here you have Rabbi Yosef is telling us what Rav said. We've had other times when people have been coming to us and telling us what Rav says. So Reish Lakish asks, Manu Rav, lo yadayinu. Who is this Rav that they're always talking about? They're constantly talking about things that Rav had said, but I don't know who he is. Really, you don't remember that Talmud Rav? Now Rav had grown up in Bavel, but then he moved to Eretz Yisrael and lived there for many years. Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan are both natives of Eretz Yisrael, but now Rabbi Yochanan is saying you don't remember Rav. Shishimish is Rebbe Rabba. He served, he learned Torah by and personally served the great Rebbe, which is Rebbe, Rabbi Yehudah HaNasi, the composer of the Mishnah, and Rabbi Priya, and he also served Rabbi Priya, and Rabbi Yochanan continues, Kim, and I swear in Hashem's name, you want to know how great he was, all those years that he served his Rebbeim sitting in front of them, he was a senior enough Talmud that they would give him permission to sit in front of them. filled those ears. I would serve those same chachamim, but only standing. I was one of the junior talmidim, and I had to stand in respect for them. Whereas Rav was so great that they allowed him to sit. So Rav Yochanan says to Rav Shlakish, you really don't remember him. Now, in his old age, Rav moved from Eretz Yisrael and moved back to Bavel, and as we're going to have later on in the Masechta, we hear a story where he revitalized Jewish life in Bavel. So apparently now he had been gone for a long time from Eretz Yisrael, but so Rav Yochanan says, still, you don't remember him from all the years that he was there? Look how great he was. Later in the Masechta, we have a couple of other examples where Rav Yochanan had tremendous respect for Rav. We would have an example towards the end of the Masechta. For example, Rabbi Yochanan reminisces of how one time Rav was sitting as a Talmud in front of Rebbe, and they were talking in very high-level learning, and meanwhile Rabbi Yochanan says, I was 17 rows of Talmudim behind them, I was one of the junior Talmudim, and I couldn't follow what they're talking about. So you're forced to remember Rav. So Rish Lakish asks Uman Govar, so what's his greatness, what's his strength, what's his greatness in Torah? And Rabbi Yochanan answers, who Govar Bekula? He's great in everything. He's great in Torah, and he's great in Chassidus. So now that Rabbi Yochanan had said that, B'yab Kosach Rish Lakish Vomar, so right away Rish Lakish started speaking, and he said, you know what I do, but I'll tell you something. I don't remember him in person. And it seems maybe that Rish Lakish was younger than Rabbi Yochanan. So it's very possible that in fact he didn't have a chance to really know Rav well while he was still in Eretz Yisrael. He may have seen him occasionally, and therefore Rabbi Yochanan is surprised you don't know him, but he hadn't really gotten to know him. However, Rabbi Yochanan says, Rav Zocher also Ish Latoy. In truth, though, that man, Rav, should be remembered for good. That they said the following teaching in his name. So actually, Rish Lakish says, now, I do remember him after all. Nehir Ali actually says, I do remember him now, and now I can remember him for good, that they said the following teaching in his name. Now, we learned back on the first and second parak, when we talk about all the dinim of Shechita, we said that you have the two simonim over there, the windpipe and the esophagus, by an animal, most of both of them has to be cut, and by a bird, most of one of them. So now we also talked about that you can have a case where the simonim are detached from the places where they're supposed to be attached to in the body. Yesterday we learned about simonim shenidalgalu, where they're unmoored from their places of attachment in the body, or from one, or they're usually attached together along their length, and then they become detached. But we call that kind of thing shmuta, where the simon is not firmly in place, but it's rather hanging down loosely. So Rish Lakish says, they said over in Rav's name, shmuta or shmuta, if you have an animal where one of these simonim is shmuta. So specifically we're talking about the windpipe over here. If the windpipe is shmuta, is hanging loose from its place, ushmuta, but we also see that it was shechted, we see that it was actually cut through for the shechita. Now, we don't know whether whether the shmuta took place before the shechita or after it. If it was before it, then the animal would be trefa. So now we've learned a few times in the Masechta, is it that in and of itself that makes it treifa, that would be what's included in where we said in the Mishnah, where we talked in the Mishnah about ipur, where the simonim are uprooted, or Tosfos et Yor a couple of times from the Baal Halachas Gerlis, the Bahag, who says that no, it's not really one of the treifas, but it's a special halacha l'mochi misinai that says that when it's shmurta, then you can't shecht it. Since the fact is, if you can't shecht it, then there's no way to make the animal kosher. In any case, so now you find that shmuta and shchuta. So rather than said shayla, then the animal would be kosher. She'iyaf shel shmuta shita also shchuta. Because it's impossible if the windpipe was hanging loosely over there, it would be impossible to shecht it. Because then the shchita requires that it's under tension, so that the knife will be able to cut it. If it's not under tension, if it's hanging loose over there, it's going to be impossible to do a proper shchita of it. So if you see that it was shechted, then obviously it must have gotten disconnected from its place after the shechita, and then tray for someone to shoot it. So this official is saying, you know what, I do remember Rav, I do remember to say over that statement in his name. However, Rabbi Yochanan says, no, it's not so simple to just say you should be not to Yovi v'yak. What you're going to need to do is you're going to need to bring the wood pipe and cut it someplace else and compare it and see whether the cuts compare in whether the cuts are comparable. If they do, then it means the animal is tsefer, because what you're doing is that then if obviously you shecht him through it now, when after the animal is dead and after the windpipe is clearly detached from its place, and you shecht it and you still find that now the cut of it resembles the other one, then it means the other one was also done while the animal already was shmutter, and therefore would be tsefer. So you'd have to actually take them and compare them. One interesting thing that I saw from the father of the Shoyu Lameshiv, he talks about, I mean, the dinim of Shtika were earlier in our Masechta. Why are we bringing this in over here of all places? Okay, you could say simply because, you know, we quoted what Rabbi Yosef had said to Rabbi Yosef and Rish Lakish, and Rish Lakish was wondering who Rav is, and then he remembers this thing. Rabbi Leibush, his name is, points out another factor as well. Here we're talking about the question of whether when you have a suffix, you need to check for it or not. So according to Rav, you don't need to check for it automatically. The fact that it's shmuta means that it's not shmuta. Whereas according to the Yerkanan, we're saying that you still, when you're able to check, you need to check, and therefore you need to do that over here. You do in fact need to compare it. Tosfos points out that you would have to, in that simon itself, in that windpipe itself, you can't compare between one animal and another. Tosfos also discusses earlier in the Masechta, we had a case where they shechted the esophagus and then found that the windpipe was shmuta, and he said that it's a sofek and shlita, so there we couldn't cut it, and Tosfos explains what the difference was, because even if it was uprooted before shchita, but there was still chayus of the animal in the esophagus, and now it has no chayus, and therefore it's not really comparable. We were talking about a case of a bird. Tosfos also discusses that why. So again, you can't use a different bird or a different animal over here. So therefore, Rabbi Yochanan is saying you would have to compare it and see whether the cuts are the same. Well, the Gemara continues. Amar Rav Nachman, Loishanu Ela Shalei Tofes V'Siman. However, this rule that Rav is saying it would be kosher without even checking, at a point of Yerkan, and you have to check it, that would only be if you didn't hold the simonim while you're shechting. So then, again, if it's not under tension, if it's swapping there loosely, then you wouldn't be able to do a proper shtick. Aval Tofes V'Simonim B'Shachat. But if he grabbed the simonim, he's holding them between his fingers and shechted, so then he's putting it under tension, then it is perfectly possible that the windpipe was in fact detached from its place, and nevertheless it was shechted, because you have it under tension, and therefore the knife is able to cut through the simonim, and therefore we have to be concerned that it happened, that it got uprooted, that it got dislocated before shechita, and therefore the animal would be traced. So the gusa that we have over here is Reb Nachman is just explaining what Rav and Reb Yechon are saying, that they're talking about when Loi Tofas, and he's pointing out that there is a case of Tofas. There's a different gusa that they bring. Reb Nachman Omar, which means that Reb Nachman is arguing them. Here Reb Yechon would be saying that you can compare them, and Reb Nachman is saying that no, if Tofas is Simonim, then comparing them is not actually going to be effective. And then there's another explanation that can mean that Reb Nachman comes to argue with Rav. So there's quite a bit of discussion about various possibilities with the shmuta and shvuta business. Okay. The Mishnah had said Zatval. After the Mishnah had listed all the tereifos that we've been spending the last 12 blocks talking about, so the Mishnah had said Zatval. This is the general rule. Anytime that an animal has a condition where it's not going to live, then it's tereif. So the Gemara says Lasuyamai. What does that Zatval come to add to us? When the Mishnah says Zatval, it always comes to add something that wasn't expressed before. And the answer is Lasuyashev Shmaitza. It comes to include seven statements of Amiroyim that we learned at the beginning of the Perek, seven cases of Trafis that were not stated in the Mishnah, but nevertheless, they still are Trafis because they're still in Kamoya Chaya, that the animal is not going to be able to live with such conditions. Okay. So now in this connection, the Gemara says, Dvei Yosef Rishva, the members of the family of Yosef the trapper, this was a guy who would trap animals for a living, Mocho Begidim Nashiv Akati. They would strike an animal on the Gidanosha and kill it then, and kill it that way. So the question is whether an injury to the Gidna. So Rashi explains they would shoot it with arrows, or they would hit it with a stick. On the other hand, there are Rishonim who say that no, if they did it, the Ozerua says that if it was an arrow, then it might have actually cut the Gidim, and that would be trade. So here we're just talking about that they hit it with a stick in the area of the Gidanosha, the sciatic nerve, and then it died from that. Also, the Kamei did Rabbi Yehuda ben Maaseiah. So they came to Rabbi Yehuda ben Maaseiah to ask whether that's suppose that now they hit it over there, and then they before it has a chance to die, they sheft it. Is it a problem of treifus? So he answers them. How can you add to the treifus? All you can include is what the Chachamim said, and the Chachamim did not list being struck on the Gidanosha as one of the treifus, and therefore it's not a problem. As the Gemara is going to explain in the next couple of lines why indeed the Chachamim themselves didn't list it among the treifus in the first place. Similarly, the Gemara says, "Rapapa ba'aba rishva, rapapa ba'aba the trapper." So on the side of it here it says, "Dvei rapapa ba'aba rishva," the members of the household of rapapa ba'aba, the trapper, "Mochu b'kulia," they would strike an animal in the kidneys. So Rashi explains that they would use an arrow to shoot it in the kidney, but be careful that it doesn't go anywhere below the kidneys into the rest of the body cavity. Again, the Ozerua says that no, we'd have to be talking about with a stick. If it was an arrow, then we have to be concerned about holes. In any case, so the same thing. Now the animal would die. So now also the Kamei did a Baba, so they came to ask Baba, if we do this, we hit it in the kidney, and then we shecht it before it dies, would it be treifus now? And the same thing. Amalahui tells them, yes, how can you add to the treifus? You can only include what the Chachamim enumerated, and this isn't one of them. Now we are going to have later on the teretz that where the animal is suffering from certain kinds of kidney conditions, then it's treifa. But here we're talking about infections or things like that. Here we're talking about where it was injured by a blow or something like that. In addition, also the Maharam Shif points out that there the Gemara talks about if it's full of pus or things like that. So here we're talking about that it didn't get full of pus as from that. Okay, so the question is, in both these cases, Rokachazin and Kamvesa. The fact is, in both these cases, we see that the animal does die. Why, indeed, are they not counted as treifus? And the answer is, Dmiri, because we have the Kabbalah from our Rebbeim, the Ibadri lo sama chaya, that if we were to sprinkle some medicinal powder on that area, then and it would actually cause the flesh even to knit back together, then it would be cured. So in other words, all the cases of our Mishnah and all the cases we've been discussing in the Gemara throughout the Sederet are all cases where even medicine is not going to help the animal live. Therefore, it's treifa. But when you have a case, these kinds of cases, yes, the animal dies, but if they right away had the proper kind of medicine, they could cure the animal and it would go on to live, and therefore it's not considered a treifa. Now again, as we learned at the beginning of the Perek, even as medical science has changed and advanced, and sometimes even the nature of animals has changed since the time of the Gemara, nevertheless, we still go according to the treifas as they are listed in this Perek and in the other places in the Gemara and in the Poskim. We don't say that something, we don't look at whether modern medicine would consider this survivable, it's still treifa, and we don't consider whether modern medicine would say that a certain other condition is deadly. We don't add it to the treifas. One interesting example that we did have earlier in the Perek, we talked about the Rambam learns that if the upper jaw is missing, then the animal is treifa. And Chachmei Lunel asked him about that because it doesn't say that anywhere in the Perek over here. Doesn't that amount to adding to the treifus? And the Rambam said no, because the Mishnah says that if the lower jaw is removed, the animal is kosher, that automatically implies that if the upper jaw is removed, it's treifa. And he explained the reason, because that cold air gets into the lungs and it kills the animal. So the point is, that's not the hoisif ala treifus. The Rambam is learning that from an implication of the Mishnah even though it didn't say it explicitly. But to add something new, like we're talking about if he was slicing the animal on the gidanosha or the kidney, that we're saying we can't add that to the treifus. So now comes the next Mishnah. Now that we learned in the previous Mishnah, a whole list of things that make an animal tshreifa. Now let's talk about things where an animal is kosher despite having some kind of injury or defect. So the Gemara says, "Ve'elu tshreifas for the hay." The following things in animals are kosher. Now, many of them are exactly the opposites of things that we learned at the beginning of the parak. But Tosfos earlier, Tosfos refers over here. They explained that with each of these ones that we're going to list in the Mishnah, there is a chiddush that we need to tell us why the Mishnah has to explicitly list it rather than just learning it from inference from the previous Mishnah. So the first one is. So first of all, mikvah hagagera. So first of all, if a windpipe has a hole, ocean mistika, or it's cracked, a crack along its length. So we learned before, if it has a hole more than a certain size, it's going to be treifa. But here, if the hole is smaller than that, and here also, if you have a crack along the length of it, as the animal stretches out its neck, then the crack will close up. We learned this earlier in the parak, and therefore over time the crack will be. So how much of the windpipe can be missing, and how much of the windpipe can be missing, and the animal will still be kosher? Reb Shimon Gamliel ad ki isra italki. So Reb Shimon Gamliel says only until the hole is the size of an Italian isser, which is a certain size coin. It contains the Rambam defines it as containing 4 barley grains weight of silver. So the size of that point, as long as the hole is smaller than that, then the animal is kosher. So the Ran points out also. So even though the previous Mishnah had said that only if it's most of it, the reason we're mentioning it over here is because we wanted to mention this point of Reb Shimon Gamliel's Shilah. And similarly with each of the other things in the Mishnah, we're going to talk that there's going to be a chiddush in it compared to what we had before. Another one, nifchasav regolos. If there's a hole in the skull, but there's not a hole in the actual membranes around the brain, the dura mater or the pia mater. Within that, you have machlokas. If there's a hole of a certain minimum size, do we automatically assume that the membranes are punctured? So then you have the Rashi learns that unless the hole is the size of a cellar, then it's not a problem. And Rabbi Natam holds that even if it's larger than that, then it's fine as long as we know that the membranes have not been punctured. But the membrane, the brain, doesn't have a hole. Next, nikav alev, the loy lebeis halalei. If the heart has a hole in it, but the hole doesn't go all the way into the chambers of the heart. So then the point is that even though there's a hole in the side of the heart, in the wall of the heart, but it doesn't go all the way through. Therefore it's fine. Tosfos at the beginning of the parak points out that given that the heart has very thick holes and has very thick walls, you would think that maybe there's a certain distance, maybe there's a certain depth when a hole would still make it safer, and we're saying that nevertheless it's not. The Ran also adds that with this nick of a lathe, you could even have, let's say, what if the hole does go all the way through from one side to the other, but it goes only through the muscle of the heart and doesn't go into the chambers of the heart, into the ventricles or whatever of the heart altogether. It just goes through. It starts off on one side of the muscle and goes all the way through and comes out on the other side. You would think that maybe it would be kreifa, and therefore the Mishnah is telling us that not. Next, nishbra shen. If the spine is broken, but the spinal cord has not been damaged, so then it's also the animal is also suffering. Another din, mitra kaved. If the liver was removed, the nishtayer and then a kezias, but there's a kezias left of it. As we learned earlier in the parak, we ended up saying in two or three different particular places in order, and then it'll be able to regenerate. Next, if the hemsis or the vesakosis, which we learned before, two of the stomachs of the animal, the third and the second stomach, if there's a hole one into the other. So we learned before, they have a wall in common, And right. in that rule, there's a hole, a sphincter that allows the food eventually, once the food has been like chewed up and then the cud has been chewed enough times that it passes from the base hakoisis into the hemisphere. So now, if in addition you have another hole between them, whether because of disease or whether because of injury or whatever, nevertheless, still kosher because it doesn't go into the body cavity, it's just into the next stomach. So find some undigested food, some incompletely digested food, then we'll get through from the base of choices to the hemisphere, but that's not a reason to be clear. That's not a reason to be clear the animal traits. And again, what's the chiddush in this? Given that we had before, when we said that if they have a hole out to the outside, then that would mean that it's tzureipa. So fine. The point is, in the words, that still it has a hole. You would think that maybe there's a problem, but no, because the hole is only into the other ones. Next. Also continues the Mishnah. Nitzalat choil. If the spleen was removed. Now the spleen is meant to basically to break down used red blood cells and recycle the iron in them. But it's not a vital organ. In fact, the Gemara tells us in some places that sometimes when they had people who needed to be fast runners, they would actually do an operation on them to remove their spleen, so that way it doesn't weigh them down. So the spleen is not a vital organ, and if it's missing, then the animal is kosher. Nitrochloius, or if the kidneys were removed, we talked about at the beginning when we were starting to learn the Perek, we talked about that on the face of it. Everybody always wondered, what do you mean if the kidneys are removed? How could the animal possibly be kosher? Doesn't the kidneys still through the blood? But they found, you know, in an experiment that some British scientists did about 40 years ago in the Netherlands, they found that kosher animals that chew their cud actually can survive without kidneys, because then instead the blood gets filtered through various other parts of the digestive system. So therefore the animal is kosher. Another one, nitalechiatachten, if the lower jaw was removed, so now you're going to have to force feed the animal, because it's not going to be able to eat normally, but nevertheless, it's not safer for that. We did learn earlier that you have to make sure that the fact that it was, we learned that it was cut, actually, as opposed to, we said, if it was ripped out, then you have a problem, because then it may affect the simonin. And again, we have what the Rambam says that we were talking about before, that the implication is that if the upper jaw is removed, then the animal is safer. Next. Nitla Emshalah. Another one would be if the womb of the animal was removed. That's not the womb is not a vital organ. Therefore, removing it doesn't make the animal chesa. And another one, Vacharusa, Midei Shamayim. Another one where the lungs shriveled and became hard, Midei Shamayim, by the hand of Hashem, meaning because of something natural. For example, it got scared by lightning, but it got scared by thunder and lightning, for example. So then, even though temporarily the lungs shrank and hardened, nevertheless, it will eventually heal. It will eventually regenerate and go back to normal. Therefore, the animal is kosher. But the Gemara is going to explain, as opposed to, we're going to say that if it got scared by people, for example, you shafted another animal in front of it, then it got terrified by that, then the lung is not going to regenerate. We'll see in the Gemara in a couple of tafim how exactly we tell the difference between one and the other. Finally, the Mishnah finishes off. Hagluda, if an animal's skin has been peeled off, now that could be because it did hard work and the skin came off. It can be because of disease. It can be whatever. Rav Meir Machsher v'Chum Posel. Rav Meir says an animal with that is kosher. The Chum say that it's possible, and that it's treifa because it needs skin in order to live. So the Gemara is going to talk about how much skin has to be missing, and in order how much skin has to be missing, some of the details of these things, how much skin still has to be intact in order for the animal to be kosher. A Gemara elsewhere talks about, is it that the Meir holds that eventually the skin will regenerate, and the Chachamim say that no, meanwhile, without skin, it's going to die. Or another explanation of it, the Gemara brings elsewhere in Nida, is that either way, they both agree the skin's not going to regenerate, but the Meir holds that's fine. The layer of muscle below it will harden enough to serve the functions of the skin to protect the animal, whereas the Chum will say that not. Okay. Now, we said in the Mishnah, we started by saying, the Eluk Shedus for the Behemoth. Well, the first Mishnah of our Parakav said Elu Tresus, and our Mishnah says Eva Elu Tresus. Now, the word Elu usually suggests exactly these and nothing else. So we have a discussion on that point. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Elu Tresus Dafka. Rabbi Yochanan says that when it says Elu Tresus, the first Mishnah means Dafka, means in other words that there's no other ones other than the ones mentioned in the first Mishnah that are Tresus. Fine, Rabbi Yochanan is going to agree. The Pashtus that we said, Zach Favre, said this is the rule that includes Shev Shmeitzer, the seven statements of Amoraim, but basically he's going to say, in other words, that there's no others to be added to that. So that Mishnah says Elu Tresus, and therefore for parallelism, all one says the Elu Tresus, even though maybe the Mishnah, the list in our Mishnah, is not so exhaustive. Shimon Lakasham, where Shlokas says the other way around. Eluk Shadus Dafka, on Mishnah, when it says Eluk Shadus means specifically that there were no other defects in the animal other than the ones listed over here that would leave the animal caught. So the Gemara says, B'mai from Mishnah, what's the actual Machalikas? What cases are they talking about which are not listed in the first Mishnah, but also not listed in our Mishnah? And then that commitment between Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish would be whether it makes the animal tough. And the answer is bid of master. They're arguing about a din that a master says. The Amr of Master, Rab Masna had said, this was actually one of the Shev Shmeitzer, this was one of the seven statements of Amoraim that we learned about at the beginning of the parak. So Rab Masna had said, Hai Buka de Atma, the socket of the thigh. Buka actually literally means a bottle, so it means the end of the thigh bone, which is rounded, so it's shaped like a bottle. The atma of the thigh, the shof miduchte, that is dislocated from its place. So you have in the hip bone there's a deep socket over there, into which the top end of the thigh bone inserts into that. It's a ball and joint socket so that the leg can be moved and swung in any direction. So now Rav Masna tells us that if that joint came apart, trefa, then the animal is trefa. Now, the first Mishnah hadn't mentioned that, but our Mishnah hadn't mentioned it either. So what's the deal with that? Rav Yochanan Amar Elu Tresus Dafka. So Rav Yochanan, who says that the Mishnah had said, the first Mishnah had said Elu Tresus, and it didn't list this, therefore it means Dafka, so nothing of that. So therefore, and Rav Yochanan says, Tana Tresus for Tana Zahfal. The first Mishnah had mentioned a bunch of Tresus. It added the word Zahfal. So fine, so it includes other things that are not listed in the Mishnah. But the Chazir, the Ramasna, to ask him Zachfal, but then the Tana realized, wait a minute, if we say Zachfal, then at anything where the animal can't live is going to be Trefa, and that shouldn't that include Ramasna's case as well? But in fact, Rav Yochanan says the Tana of the Mishnah held that Ramasna's case is not Trefa. So my timer. Now, why is that? The damya l'natuli, because after all, this is a little bit like a, this is kind of like a trefa of natula, of something being removed. In other words, the same way, for example, the Mishnah I mentioned where the liver is missing and covered shenital, and therefore the animal is trefa. So now you're going to think the same thing with this hip socket that was dislocated, that it's trefa. So therefore, tona elu trefas, therefore the Mishnah specifically said elu trefas, meaning finally who did trefa, only cases in the Mishnah that are listed in the Mishnah are trefa, or only ones that are completely like it, called it a masna chera, but this case of a masna would actually be kosher. It's not really like Natula, because after all, it's not Natula, it's just dislocated. So therefore, Rabbi Yochanan says, in other words, the phrasing of the first Mishnah is meant to tell us that this case of the hip socket being dislocated is not in fact Shreif. Rabbi Shimon Lakish learns it the other way around. Eluk Shreifus Stavka, when our Mishnah says Eluk Shreifus, means specifically these cases are kosher, so not that case of the dislocated thigh. Maybe Rish Lakish understands the thought process of the Tana as follows. Tana Tresus, the first Mishnah had listed all the Tresus, the Tana Zachfal, and added the word Zachfal, and which includes various other cases that are not mentioned in the Mishnah. But then the Tana realized that that's not good enough. It doesn't include, that Zachfal will not include Rav Masna's case. Because, my timer, why not? Because The Mishnah is listing cases where there's a hole in something, where it's removed or whatever. But we have to consider this kind of case where the thigh is dislocated. It doesn't really resemble any of the cases of holes, because there's no hole over here. It doesn't resemble any of these cases of psuka. Nothing was cut over here. Or the natula namule damia. It's not really like natula either. Rabbi Yochanan had argued that it's similar to natula, because after all, removed from its place. So therefore, we would have thought to include it, and therefore the Mishnah, but the Mishnah is specifically excluding it with Eilat Shleitz. Rish Lakish takes it the other way around. The fact is, it really isn't like Natula. So therefore, so far, you would have said that it's kosher. Tana, Eilat Shleitz, but therefore, to foreshadow that, says Rish Lakish, is why our Mishnah says Eilat Shleitz, meaning Hani, who did Shleitz, only the ones listed in our Mishnah are kosher, called it a Masna today from the case of a Masna with a dislocated thigh, would actually be trade. So that's the nafka minna between how we learn the wording of the two Mishnayos according to Rabbi Yochanan and according to Rish Lakish. So the Gemara says gufat. Let's get back to, let's analyze what Rav Masna had actually said. Amar Rav Masna, I book a da'afman to shof me joktei. And if the thigh is dislocated from the socket, then trefa, then the animal's trefa. Rava says in and of itself, the fact that it's dislocated, the animal will still be kosher. It can still be put back together. But only the ifsik nive treifa. Only if the nive are cut or otherwise broken, then it's treifa. What is nive? So Rashi explains like this. If you look at the end of the thigh bone, you'll see over there, there's a little ligament that goes from the middle of that bone into the middle of the socket and helps hold them together. And you have a blood vessel in the middle of it. Rashi says it's very small. So now, Rava is saying that the thigh itself being dislocated is not a problem. The problem would be if that little ligament inside over there also gets cut or broken or whatever. The Rambam and some other Rishonim have a different understanding of nive, that it means on the outside of that joint, you have a number of ligaments that help hold the joint together, and according to the Rambam, those would be nive, and we're saying if those are cut or damaged, then it's safer. And the Gemara says, v'hilchsa, the bottom line halacha, if siknami, actually even if those ligaments are cut, then also p'sheira, the animal is still kosher. Adimus akla isakuli, it's only trefa, only if that nive is actually rotted away, is actually deteriorates and rots away. So that kind of thing, it's not going to heal, and therefore now the animal is considered trefa. But if you just had, if the hip is dislocated, the animal is in fact kosher. Even if the nive are cut, then it's also kosher. Only if the nive have deteriorated and rotted away, then the animal would be trefa. Next, we said in the Mishnah, Ad Kama Tefsel. Although we said, as far as the windpipe, that if it has a hole, it's still kosher, and the Shimon Gamliel had said that the size of the hole that would make a trefa is like an Isere Talpi. So the Gemara says, Oma Zikiri, so Zikiri says to the Chachamim Bavel, after the Neskani Lachon Shiura, you have never seen an Isere Talpi, which is this shear that you need to know for the windpipe. So how are you going to know what the size is? So he tells them, Shiura Kedinra Kudina. It's the same size. Shiura Bedinra Kudina. You can instead estimate the size of the Isere Talpi by using a coin that you can find in our part of the world, a dinar from Kudina. Kudina is a Kurdistan, the area of Hori Ararat, in an area in what's nowadays northern Iraq and eastern Turkey. So a dinar that comes from there is the size of an Isere Talpi. The Habakkuk Shittas Zutrasi, he tells them it's like the size of a small pruta kachel pruta. Or Mishnakfi Beni Pshitta de Pumbedissa, if you look among the small coins that circulate in Pumbedissa, you'll find examples of such coins, and then you'll know what the size is. So the Gemara continues. Amar Rabchana Pesira, Rabchana, the money changer, Pesira literally means the one at the table. Interestingly, we have in our parasha, we have that Balak sends from Bilam and brings him from Pesir, And Rashi points out the simple meaning of Psor is the name of the place where Bilam lives. But Rashi points out that from the Medrash, that also the word Psor is the same word as Psor over here in the Gemara. It means a table, means because Bilam was like a money changer. Everybody's always coming to a money changer for his services, and the same way everybody's always coming to Bilam for his services in cursing people. So Rav Chana Pesira, Rav Chana the money changer, that was his parnasa. So he says, Iva minai habikoi, bar napcha. He says, one time bar napcha came and stood above me and stood in front of me. Bar napcha can mean Rav Yochanan, who's sometimes called Rav Yochanan bar napcha. So he came and he asked me for one of these chudinah dinners, for one of these dinners for chudinah, the shari beit treifa, to figure out the size of the treifa hole. Now says Rav Chana Pesira, when I saw Bar Napcha over there, the great Talmud Chacham, I wanted to stand up in his honor. He's coming to ask me to sell him such a coin. But after all, he's a distinguished great Talmud Chacham, so I wanted to stand up for him. But he didn't let me stand up. He told me to stay sitting. Then Yoyada explains that maybe what happened was Bar Napcha came from behind. Rav Chana didn't see him. He only sees him when he's standing next to him. But now already now Bar Napcha is able to physically prevent him from getting up. Amali tells me, Shave beneath shave, my son, sit. Ain Bali Umanuis, Rashoyim Laman, the Vnechim Rachamim, the Shashas took him to Malachta. People, workers, craftsmen, are not allowed to stand up for Talmud Chachamim when they're busy with their work. Because when they take the time to stand up, here we're talking about, Rashi explains, they're hired by somebody else. Now here, this Rav Chana Pesira, he's a money changer. He has lots of coins available, which is why Bar Napcha, to begin with, came to ask him for such a coin. But the point is, though, Rashi explains, that he's joining in the profits of other people. He always has to be focused on. He has to be focused on looking out for customers. And basically, he's sharing the profits with others. He's sharing the profits of his business with others. So he can't take time off his work because then he's impinging on the work that he's supposed to be doing to earn money for them. That's a point of Rashi. Tosfos says it doesn't even have to be that. Even if he himself is just doing work for himself and earning for himself, nevertheless, he's still not required to stand up. So when we say in Rashoyin, doesn't mean that they're not allowed to. It just means they don't have to. In any case, so Bar Napcha tells me that you're busy doing your work, whether it's according to Rashi, because you're doing it, you have an arrangement, you have a profit-sharing arrangement with somebody else, and they can't take away from them, or according to Tosfos, even that you don't need to, even if it's for yourself. So the Gemara says, well, boy, you're telling me that not? Well, it's not. We learned in a Mishnah in Bikurim, as in yesterday's Shlosh of Perachim of Rambam, in fact. When people come with the Bikurim to Yerushalayim, Kol Bali Umanuyas Onim Epnehem, all the craftsmen and all the storekeepers would stand up in front of them, the Sholem, the Shloima, and they would ask about their peace, they would ask about their welfare, they would greet them, the Omen Lahem, and they would tell them, Achenu, Anshim, not complaining, Barachim, the Shalom, our brothers, the people of such and such a place, you've come in peace, or it can be understood as a question, Barachim, the Shalom, are you coming in peace? Is everything well with you? So we see that the Bali Umanuyas do stand for them. So why shouldn't they stand for Hashem? And the answer is Omer Rav Yochanan, and that's the difference. With Pneum Omer, they do stand for the people who bring the Bikurim, but Pnei Tamar HaChachamim ain't Omer, but they don't stand up for Tamar HaChachamim. And Omer Rav Yosef Ba'oven, Bo'yurei kama chaviva mitzvah v'shaita. From this we can see how precious is a mitzvah in its proper time. And here the people are bringing the Bikurim, and you have a chiyuv to stand up for them. When they're doing that mitzvah, shouting a pneum omdim, because we see for the people who are bringing bikurim and who are now doing a mitzvah in its proper season, the people stand up and take time off their work to do that. And yet they don't stand up because they're wasting time from their work. Now, of course, a person who learns Torah, the Pnei Yeshua points out that the Gemara is also in Kedushin. A person who learns Torah is himself doing a mitzvah. So when they come to the Bali Umanuyas, they're not right now doing a mitzvah necessarily. Okay, here, Bar Napcha is coming to the Chana Pesira to get a particular coin that he can use for a mitzvah purpose, but he's not necessarily being osik in the mitzvah of Talmud Torah right then. So therefore, you don't have as much of a chiyuv to stand up. But as opposed to what people were bringing before them, they're doing a mitzvah right now, and you see how important their mitzvah is. So the Gemara says, Mimai, but who says that that's the correct explanation? Maybe that's not the reason maybe that's not the reason why we should stand up for the people who bring before him. You could argue, you could argue it's rather so that we don't cause them to stumble in the future. In other words, if we don't go and greet them in a very friendly way, and they've come all the way from whatever town they lived in, they're going to think to themselves, in the future, why should we bother? Maybe even the people of Yerushalayim don't have any respect for us farmers who come from nowhere. So maybe that's it. Therefore, the people of Yerushalayim have to stand up for them to demonstrate that they do actually respect them. And this way, they'll be more, this way, they'll be more willing to come in the future. In fact, Ben Yehoyada points out they're likely to think the people of Yerushalayim they're not respecting us, because after all, what are we doing? We're bringing a basket of food. How much is it worth already? So they're going to be embarrassed and they're not going to want to come in the future. So therefore, we definitely want to have that the people of Yerushalayim should demonstrate to them how friendly and welcoming they are. So that doesn't show they're necessarily this point of chaviva mitzvah shaita. Okay, in any case, the point is that again, Bar Nacha, which again maybe is Rabbi Yechanan, had come to the Pachon of Pesirah to get this coin that again, as Yuri had said, you can use this coin where if you don't have an Isur HaItalki available to you, then you can use this other coin, this Dinur Kurdana, which is the same size. Interestingly, if Bar Nacha means Rabbi Yechanan lives in Eretz Yisrael, Italian coins, Roman coins circulate over there, but maybe you could say by his times, maybe the Isser HaItalki of the Mishnah wasn't circulating anymore, they'd changed the currency, and therefore he needed this other coin. Though maybe this indicates, though, that maybe Bar Nacha is not Rabbi Yechanan, but rather some other Amora who actually lived in Babel.